order. Go ahead and turn off their cell phones. Any other devices that might interrupt the meeting? Stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Along now to item number three. This is discussion and possible action, the approval of the agenda for this date, October the 20th, 2015. Do we have any changes to make on today's agenda?
No, Mr. Chairman, for once, none.
Okay, any public comment on today's agenda? Mr. Phelps?
Should be on.
Thank you, Chairman McBride. I'm Mark Joseph Phillips, Virginia City resident. October 20th, 2015. Item number three, this is discussion before the approval of today's agenda. I'm here to inform the commissioners that at this time, supporting materials for the ordinance amending Title 17 are not here, specifically a readable map referring to the Comstock Historic District. What was published online and available online through planning was not in a format large enough to read the detail. I submitted a letter to the clerk's office yesterday, and we're starting the meeting without it. Attorney General, file number 00-25, dated October 3rd, 2000. As to materials that were not available on the agenda posting date, a member of the public is justified in asking for such materials at the meeting, and the public body must interrupt its meeting to provide the requested copies.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, staff's position is that Mr. Phillips has available exactly the same information as was provided to the commission in exactly the same format.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. You've been provided the same information that the commission has been provided. We've all been provided the same equal information on this. Mr. Osborne?
That map is...
Mr. Phillips, please, we don't take comments out of the...
Mr. Chairman, I am prepared to discuss this matter when we get to that agenda item, if you so please. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Is there any other public comment on today's agenda? Hearing none, motion for approval.
I'll approve to approve the agenda for October 20th, 2015.
I'll second that motion.
Moved and seconded to approve today's agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And the motion carries. Moving along now to the consent agenda. Anybody have any questions or concerns regarding today's consent agenda? Hearing none, call for a motion.
I'll move to approve today's consent agenda.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded to approve today's consent agenda. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Did you say aye?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, Carrie, for having us on. Moving along now to item number eight. This is discussion only, no action, no public comment. Committee and staff, including quarterly financial updates for the fiscal year 2015-2016. Why don't we start with tourism. Denny, you have anything today? Very good. Mr. Ballard at Communications.
I have nothing to report.
Mr. Hayes. Fire Department? Very good.
Mr. Nevin of Public Works?
Not on budgets, Mike.
Just if you have anything.
Just other staff besides budgets.
Just for regular staff.
I can mention just one item quickly when I get into the board.
Okay, that's fine. With the recorder's office, Ms. Chapman?
Yes, I have something to say today.
Wow.
It's not really worth it.
So, this has kind of been what's going on in my office recently. I don't know how much you know of the new TRID disclosures. It's the TILA-WESPA Integrated Disclosure Act. It's an acronym of an acronym. It's essentially, it's the integration of the Truth in Lending Act and the Real Estate Settlement Procedure Act. And this has kind of been something that's been really fun for us in the office, because little did anybody know what sort of impact this would have, not just on consumers, but especially like on our office. It's a little known component of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street reform and the Consumer Protection Act. It's also what created the CFPB, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, in the housing crisis. Title companies and lenders, they have to abide by these new rules, which pretty much control all aspects of a loan. It's lengthy and complicated. I'm just going to kind of really let you know how this affects our office and basically what we've done in response to it. Essentially, they have blended all those forms that you get in the loan process to two, where you have one loan disclosure and then you have a closing disclosure. At first glance, it looks really innocuous. But the big thing here is that they've put a ton of new regulations on it that actually pertain to dollar amounts and time frames. What does that mean to our office, right? It means that recording fees are, they are now integrated into this disclosure, because government fees are now federally mandated to be on this form. And for some of these fees, there is a zero tolerance policy. Property taxes, recording real estate transfer tax fees, these cannot vary at all from the moment they get a loan estimate to the time they close. If they are different, then it's just a headache for everybody involved. That headache can, it can result in huge fees, and it can result in, over time, essentially lenders wanting to pull out of an area because it's just too dangerous. Essentially, it's great. This is supposed to provide more transparency for the consumer, but it's really locking down the whole system. Even this is all kind of, it's not necessarily regulated by the CFPB, but where the CFPB comes in, they can, they're the ones that are in charge of the fines. The bare minimum fine for some sort of discrepancy is $5,000 per day per transaction. Now, when you think of some of these lenders that have, I mean, many, many transactions during a given day, $5,000 adds up real quick. So it's very important. As far as our office is concerned, we don't want recording fees to even come up. But we know that even in the state of Nevada, we're already kind of behind the ball, because throughout the state, we have three different transfer tax rates, and then we also have three different recording fee schedules. So somebody from Ohio, you know, a banking, Wells Fargo, it's going to be pretty tough to exactly pinpoint the recording fees that are needed. So that being said, we're trying to make our fees and our fee structure more transparent, available, and out there. We're putting it in multiple formats in multiple areas for the Recorders Association of Nevada, for our own website, we're working on developing a little calculator. So that we're doing on our end. We're changing our recording stamp so that fees are very front and center. And then another aspect of this is that the turnaround time has to be great, has to be very fast now. It's going to be pushing title companies to do e-recording because that's the only way that you can meet that sort of turnaround to get paperwork from the consumer to the title company, to the recorder's office, back to the title company, and back out to the consumer. We have changed up our processing so that if you record something, if you e-record it, you basically have all the information that day. It's out on the web, and if it's a paper, you get it back the next day. So we've essentially stepped up our whole game in order to kind of work with our industry partners on this. Certainly, this is not going to be the last time you'll hear of this, as basically we're working with other recorders around the state to come up with a feasible solution, which will probably ensure that we're at the legislature front and center at the next session.
This primarily affects residential, correct, not the commercial transactions?
Yes. But that at least that's what we've been dealing with, but certainly it's very complicated, and there are many, many aspects of it. I mean, I've been spending the last 3 months going through all of this stuff, and I'm always finding something new every time we sit down for a discussion, which is at least weekly.
It implemented October 3rd, correct?
Yes. It was pushed back. You know, it was supposed to go, I think, at the end of August, and they pushed it back to October. And it is affecting real estate right now.
Do you have a grace period, or is your grace period over, and are you on the line?
Grace period's over. It's in action. So, but like I said, you know, we're really working closely with title companies and lenders. I've been to several meetings with lenders, Wells Fargo especially. They've really taken a front and center, and then all the local title agencies, and we're trying to make it so that even what they get from our office, they don't have to work so hard to guess. So that we're all players in this field, and we know that.
It's believed that it's going to put a lot of title companies and escrow companies out of business.
Yep.
There are lenders that are going to leave the marketplace. This is very, very, very impactful. But it's going to put the federal government in a investigatory position with huge fining capability.
Exactly. The CFPB is not funded essentially by Congress. It's funded by the fees they collect. And right now, I'm not saying that there's no oversight, but it's kind of questionable. I'm sure that that's going to change in the future, even though everybody needs some sort of oversight, including that, especially one that collects such huge amount of fees. But this is all done. It's a huge catalyst for change, not just from an individual consumer standpoint, but all the way up the food chain to your local government, to the federal government. And it's going to change the way that business is done.
I think the other thing that everybody should note, and especially commission and leadership here, is that there is a section in bold print with a phone number federally to list all complaints. And so anyone, anywhere may list a complaint, and it will be heard at the federal level.
Yep. Yeah. So, but like I said, you know, we're doing our part. We're trying to work with everybody and doing the best we can with this new change. Thanks.
Okay, next up, of the assessor's office. Janet, anything today? Yeah. Nothing today? Community Services, Ms. Nevin.
A couple of quick updates today in regards to the income survey for Mark Twain. We're about 56 responses short as of the beginning of last week. We sent a second mailing out and we're hopeful that we'll get that, those needed 56 responses. We have to have 163 responses to validate the survey. So if you know Mark Twain residents, if you wouldn't mind just spreading that word and letting them know, of course, it's not mandatory that they fill out the survey, but it's greatly appreciated. So we've taken a few phone calls and hopefully have made people feel comfortable with the entire process. Keep in mind that we're sending out the surveys from the county, but all the responses are being collected at UNR. So
would it be appropriate to field a door-to-door campaign on that? It would be
Short. We're trying not to do that. We're trying to make it as, you know, not invasive and going to people's doors, because they never like that either. So that's why we're going with the mailing approach. That will be another option if we don't get the responses we need. And we have a deadline of October 31st for mail-in, so we'll kind of evaluate at that time. That's the end of next week, and see where we're at. So we're working as hard as we can to, you know, make sure that this gets completed. So also, the health fair will be held on Saturday, November 7th at Piper's Opera House from 10 to 1. It's shaping up to be a pretty good event. We have around 20 different vendors that will be there with us that morning. We'll have flu shots, pneumonia shots, and perhaps shingles vaccinations available that day. We're also doing a community flu immunization clinic in Mark Twain tomorrow. If you haven't had your flu or pneumonia shot and would like that, we'll be there from 10 to 12 at the community center. And the Nevada Health Centers, I think Sean Griffin mentioned at the last meeting, have scheduled an open house on the 28th from 1 to 4 at the community center to welcome our new nurse practitioner. That's all I have. If you have any questions for me.
Very good. Any questions for Sharon? All right. Thank you, Sharon. Okay. How about planning and human resources? Mr. Osborne?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. I wanted to give you an update. The Black and Howell Plaza down there on C Street is coming along just fine. We're going to go for advertisement here in about a week. I have vetted that through the Virginia City Tourism Commission, as well as the Comstock Historic District Commission, and the Historic District Commission did approve the project. I'll be working with Bird on some of the minute details of the project throughout the construction and development. The parking lot next door is also moving along. That was advertised this week. Those bids will be taken down to Far West Engineering on 2 o'clock on October 22nd. There's going to be a mandatory contractor meeting next door where anybody that wants to bid on the project needs to show up to the project. We'll talk about the dynamics that exist to make sure they know what they're bidding on, and we'll come up with some of those details. And then we are working again with Comstock Mining for the riprap that will be used to surface the west and the south ends of those slopes. Regarding Mark Twain flooding, we are looking at that on how to make a global approach for about the next five-year period on addressing flooding in Mark Twain. We want to make sure that before we look at making major improvements to the area, that we look at areas that are flooding, areas that would flood under different circumstances, and potentially establish easements and right-of-ways along the property there. Jason Van Hevel, my planner, is going to take lead on this project and be the project manager. He's going to work very closely with Sherry Nevin, Ron Engelbrecht down in Mark Twain, as well as Mike Nevin, Dean Haymore, and myself and Far West Engineering to kind of put a whole program together to put it in stages where we do the development at this stage, community involvement, community liaising, and then ultimately maybe one day development some improvements in that area for regional flooding. That's going to tie into the master plan as well and potential land uses that could occur in and around Mark Twain, that potentially if somebody were to use the land above Mark Twain, they could put in regional mechanisms themselves that would completely mitigate all the flooding in Mark Twain by taking the water that comes down the mountain and shunting it in and around that development. So that is moving forward, and Jason and I will be happy to give you updates along the way of where we're addressing that neighborhood and its needs. The lands bill in Virginia City Gold Hill is still moving along. I will let you know it's going to be over a year before something actually is done. But in that year, there's going to be a lot of wheels moving in process between my office, the Carson City BLM office, and the Department of Interior. Leon Thomas, the Carson City District Manager that we've worked with for the last two or three years from BLM, has moved on to Phoenix and been promoted. So Bryant Smith, right now the District Manager, is interim operating in that office, and him and the actual Regional District Manager, Ralph Thomas, and I have spoken, and all of them are on the same page that we need to get this done. It's already public law, and we need to get it done as quickly and simply as possible, including the cadastral surveys and some of the other elements that are involved at the BLM process. I'm happy to say that the BLM is doing everything they can within their processes to get this done and work very closely with us to have it finished. And lastly, speaking of BLM, the RMP, the Resource Master Plan, is nearly complete. Their final environmental impact statement, draft resource management plan, will be done about March. And at that point, there will be the whole and the master plan will be completed. I've been working with their office for the last 3 years and providing our comments from Story County on various items in that master plan. And we're coming to a closure on that. That's it. Thank you.
Any questions, Russell?
Okay.
Very good. All right. Community Development, Mr. Haymore?
I'll defer until we get to the next item.
All right. The Comptroller's Office, Mr. Gallagher?
Nothing at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Over at the Sheriff's Office, Chief Deputy Keener.
Nothing at this time.
Nothing today? All right. Special Counsel, Mr. Morse. Deputy District Attorney, Mr. Loomis.
Okay.
Chief Counsel, Ms. Langer.
Here,
I just wanted to remind everybody of the Hoover Estate. There's a live auction that's going to be taking place at 270 East Washington Street this Saturday. It's supposed to be 63 degrees at some point in the day, but we're starting out early for a preliminary viewing of all items. Will take place at 8 a.m. and the live auction begins at 9 a.m. Again, that is this Saturday. Thank you. Any questions?
All right. County Manager Whitten.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A few things. I apologize for the hoarse voice. I'm getting over the final stages of some bronchitis, apparently. While Mike's here, I want to thank Mike, and I'm sure most of you have noted while driving or walking the streets of Virginia City, particularly those of us driving, that we have something I don't know if we've ever seen on any true county-owned, county-controlled roads. And those are stop signs that are now marked with limit lines and the word stop clearly painted on the pavement. I think that's a huge help, particularly for some of these signs that have a tendency to hide. I know I've watched many a vehicle run the stop sign right here at Union and B Street, and I think his crew did a very professional and thorough job. Thanks, Mike. We're in the process, and we hope to in November, once Mr. Gallagher okays the purchase amount. We've received an appraisal on what is referred to as the Rich Connell lot. This is the lot immediately to the north of the parking area at the sheriff's and DA's office. We had made some tentative improvements in hopes of purchasing it some time back. We finally got the property titled and situated in such a way that Rich was ready and Zoe were ready to sell it. We now have an appraisal in, so we hope to bring that to you shortly and conclude it before the first of the year. Last two items, just simple ones. Unless I hear different individually from any of the three commissioners, most likely we will be cutting back to one meeting a month in November and December. We can always have a special meeting. Typically, as you can tell from even today's agenda, the agendas get light. Going in toward the end of the year. We get close to both holidays. The second meeting in November is November 17th, just a little outside of a week, outside of the Thanksgiving holiday. And then you have December 15th as well, headed into, of course, the Christmas and New Year's holidays. So we have a number of things that Vanessa hopes to do. There's a recording system upgrade that will take the system down for a little while in here, and not having probably one of those meetings, at least particularly the one in December, would be beneficial. If you guys feel you want to stay on schedule with twice-monthly meetings, please individually let me know. Otherwise, we'll have an item on the agenda, probably consent agenda for the first meeting in November. And lastly, just for a heads up for those of you planning your calendar this far in advance, we are now less than 60 days, 2 months away from the county Christmas party. It is on Friday, December 11th. It will once again be hosted over at Piper's Opera House. There will be food and beverage provided, and it is open to all citizens of Story County, and we welcome them here. And if you have special people that you want to make sure that are invited that we've done business with throughout the year, Lance, you out in the Industrial Park reports, you know, please let myself or Jesse know, because we're beginning to finalize our lists and giving them as much notice as we possibly can to save the date. And that's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Very good. Clerk's office, Vanessa, nothing today? Have I missed anyone? That concludes item number 8. Moving on now to item number 9.
Excuse me. We're still on item 8. What we wanted to do was segregate out the general staff comments versus staff and Hughes' review of the financial updates for the fiscal year.
Very good, then. We'll go ahead and we'll start all over again. And Hugh, if you go ahead and take that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a review of the first quarter's actual to budget review. As I may have mentioned in the previous meetings, I had mentioned this during a Certified Public Officers Association meeting in Reno a couple of weeks ago with all the people of the counties being present, and they were absolutely astonished at the cooperation and the abilities that we have to go through these budgets with all the department heads at such an easy pace and have such a correctable nature to it, which is almost critical when you get to budget stage of this magnitude. A couple of things that this review does: it gives the opportunity for all of the department heads to take a look at their budgets, which they usually do on a monthly basis, but to get a hold of my department and say, yeah, absolutely, this should be reclassified somewhere else. That way we clean up the financials as we go, thereby at the end of the year we have a very clean and accurate product. And it also gives us trends of where we are. This first quarter trend, with all the business that is heading our way and all the potential business heading our way, it certainly can give us some indicators of where we're going to be next the first quarter of 2016-17. It gives our department heads a heads up of where things may go for the rest of the year, and it may give us an opportunity to now take a look at those things where we may have missed in the budget in March and April of this year, and augment those so those people get a little relief off their budgets, because some things just occur, and that's the nature of the game. I have a list here, and for this part, I will go through the general revenue for the revenue for the general fund. And pick out some items, and I will, if the commissioners have questions on these, I will certainly be glad to ask them if I can. As we look at state centrally assessed and the real property transfer tax, we see an increase of 60% and 119% over last year. This is kind of a misnomer, because this actually belongs in the fiscal year 2015. The auditors have for a lot of years carried forward balances, because They didn't want to upend the apple cart and not, because those balances were consistently the same year after year. I don't think this will be the case, but I will try and get with the outside auditors and see what we think about having something. Normally, we don't get this amount of money till the end of the fiscal year, so this is a little bit of a misnomer, and I'm looking at correcting that before the next next budget cycle. Our justice court fees are up about 49% of our budget. We're sitting here at 25%, which shows us the activity, which I'm sure Justice Harrington will attest to. The one question which we will do some research on is our import tonnage fees, with all of the business that usually marks how the business is going in the industrial park. It's only trending at 16%, which I think we need to take a look at and see what the actual, if there's a problem somewhere along the line, or if it's just an accounting oversight on the part of waste management. Juvenile fines are at a 50% trend, and our miscellaneous is at 111, and the miscellaneous is always kind of a catch-all, but the reason for that is some money we received on some deferred compensation, which means that we did a good job with deferred compensation. We actually got a refund. And there was a $3,500 check from Pool Pack for risk assessment. Since we did such a good job with our risk assessment and our plans, they went and gave us a little bit of money as a bonus. I will say one thing, that we're all looking at this trending, especially since we have gone on off of guaranteed share. July's figures have come in, and they are about where we thought they would be. Nothing drastically lower, nothing drastically higher, so I think we're sitting where we think we're going to be with that. So we haven't, nothing's taken a downturn, but it really is too early to tell, with only 1 month since the Department of Taxation doesn't put those reports out until the end of September. So with that, that's the report on the revenue for the general fund. If the commissioners have no questions, we will then go to to Mike Devin with the Public Works Department. Mike?
We'll start with buildings and grounds, and there are a couple items here that I'll just make mention of. One is equipment maintenance. We're trending at 57%, primarily due to the fact that our fire extinguisher maintenance was taken out of this line item, and that's a little over $11,000 or $1,100. And I spoke to Hugh about this, and we'll take a look at that invoice to see if some of this is GL'd into other categories, if you will. The other one, we're trending at 57%. This was a budgeted item for additional cameras at the Public Works facility. That project has been completed, so, it was a one-time shot item there. Those were the only two that were trending over. We're 25% into the fiscal year. Our expenses overall are trending at 16%. The next one will be swimming pool parks. And of course, most of these trends on salaries, fringe, operating supplies, park supplies and equipment. This is, of course, a seasonal operated, parks and pools primarily. So you're going to see, more expenses during the summer months than you do at any other time of the year, so that's why, like I mentioned, salaries, some fringe items, operating supplies, and park operating are trending upwards. Overall, we're trending at 23% on expenditures for the quarter. Service, the only item there, and it always trends high, and that's the gas, diesel, and in the service fund, it's a general fund category. All of the gas and diesel countywide is purchased through that account and then gets GL'd back to the individual users when Hughes staff has an opportunity to do so.
So that journal entry has not been made yet, then? I'm thinking that since you're sitting at 62, that journal entry has not been made for the first quarter?
Probably not, yeah.
Okay, all righty. We'll take it.
Okay, and roads, there are a couple items that are trending a little bit high. One of them is travel, and the main reason for that is we were able to acquire a GSA Excess dozer, Caterpillar dozer, that we had to go after and transport back to Virginia City from Port Hueneme, California. This unit only had 600 hours on it, so we made a pretty good find there. So we had some travel expenses involved with that. Also, we're in the process of looking for a used Vactor truck, and we did send a couple of individuals to a company up in the Seattle area, 1.7, to look at a used truck that we'd gotten a proposal on. One of the individuals that went was an operator out of Lyon County, and he accompanied our fleet service manager, Trent Scaretta. So there was some airfare, lodging, and meal expense involved there. I'm glad we did send him because the unit turned out to be one that we steered away from, so we continue our search on the Vactor truck. The other item in roads, of course, it's trending high, is the maintenance, road maintenance, and this is primarily due to the huge project countywide on the chip seal. Of course, that project, you know, you can't break up by quarters. It has to all be done. It was a bid project, and that project for this fiscal year is complete, so that's why that trends high, and it looks like it trends high just in the Virginia City, but we put that line item in Virginia City, and then we break it out GL to the different locations. So that's why you see those trending high there. Water system. We have a couple that trending high. One is in the tire account, and when I looked at this, these actually were some tires that were purchased for a piece of equipment in the last fiscal year, so I don't know if we can still GL that back to that last fiscal year or not. It was over $1,000 tires. The expense actually was made last fiscal year. But I'll sit down with you, and we'll discuss that a little bit further and see where we are there. The other one is in professional services, and those are, you know, one-time allocations that we have per contract for our GIS services that we split between water and sewer. And so those are done up on the front end, so that's why that's trending a little bit high there. And let's see, in water, looks like we're trending about 11% expenditure a quarter of the way through the fiscal year. We're in pretty good shape. On the sewer side of the house, Telephone expense is trending a little bit high, and that's primarily due to the fact that we have a new plant, and it was discovered that with the metal building and facility there where operators reside to run all the equipment, they had no cell coverage in there. So Dave Ballard found us a piece of equipment through Verizon that was a $400 expense, so we now have cell signal inside the facility there. So, and the other one that's trending high is chemicals, again, a new plant. We weren't sure really what to expect this year there, so we're going to be under budget in the chemical account, and this is primarily due to the fact that there are a couple of different chemicals that are required to run the screw press, which in the end result provides the sludge that we haul off for disposal. So, you know, we're just watching other line item categories to see where we can make up that shortfall from as we go through the fiscal year. So overall in sewer, we're trending a little bit high, about 5% high in the expense side. We're at 31%. So,
Mike, has the utilities, the end of the energy bills that we were trying to look at, has that calmed down any? We were noticing on that new plant.
Well, we'll get some, I guess on two different occasions, we'll get a rebate, if you will, on some of those fees, Hugh. Their timeline for that, I think the first one may occur in December. They wanted to see how that was trending, too, because I guess there were some upfront costs that they had. And then we paid a portion of that as well. And so we'll get a couple of different rebates, you know, pretty substantial, I would imagine, on the utility side down there. Because we had to change that whole service, of course, down there. It's all been new and upgraded, new transformers and everything. So.
Okay.
Other than that, unless you have questions for me. Jack?
On the roads, Mark Twain and the Highlands came up for the high, especially the Highlands. Did the cost of stuff go up, or what was it?
No, that's, like I say, as a result of the chip slurry project that we did countywide. Recall we elected to do all of Lousetown and our first mile of Cartwright out there.
Well, this is broke out, and this is the Highlands.
Correct. Yeah.
I'm looking at page two.
That slurry seal out there was $316,453, basically.
So it was much higher than you anticipated?
No, it wasn't higher than we anticipated. It's just some of this monies are going to be used out of the opening fund balance. So they'll be, we'll have to move them in after the audit report is complete.
Is this, doing this, this should give you a pretty good idea of what it would cost, pretty close to what it would really cost to finish Cartwright.
Oh, certainly, yeah. In fact, we have that pretty much nailed down. Yeah. So as we go forward, yeah, we have a track record of that now. You bet.
Any questions for Mike? Okay, great.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike makes a good point. The audit is still in progress. It's being, the report is being processed now. But yeah, this first one is usually we don't know what the auditor's adjustments have been just yet. But hopefully they're minor. But that will all shake out by the 6 months ended report. So nice job, Mike. Chief Ames.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have just a few to discuss. The first one being office supplies. At 25%, the first quarter, we're at 46% of the budget. That's primarily due to the reopening of Fire Station 75 We really didn't have anything out there, and it sounds kind of silly, but we didn't have pencils, pens, paper, tablets. So that should level out by the end of the fiscal year. That was all up front in July costs. Dues and subscriptions, that'll level out as well. We're at 51%. Those are primarily due in July, August, so we should be fine by the end of the fiscal year. Operating supplies, I might have to borrow Hugh's glasses. We're at 43%, and that again is because of Station 75. And some of that has to do with moving the fire prevention officers out there. That is going to be a little bit higher for the year, but there is unanticipated higher than anticipated revenues that will come in and GL that and offset those overages if there are any. I don't think there will be, but if there are, there's unanticipated revenue to offset that. Communications, we're at 325%, and we knew that we would be. That number is high because there will be GLs made. I'm kind of looking at Hugh, but essentially for some of the partnerships that we have with the companies and Trick, for the handheld radios for the new personnel. When we went into this fiscal year, we intentionally did not budget for the new bodies to open that station because we weren't sure where we were at. But there is revenue sitting out there that just will transfer in and offset those expenses. The next one that we're over on is tires, and we're at 77%. And I'd like to expand on that just a little bit. That's more of an accounting error than anything. There was, out of that, we spent $12,050 out of that so far. And realistically, out of that line item, we should have only spent about $3,800. What had happened is it was inadvertently billed to 250 when it should have been billed to 270 for mutual aid expenses. I see Hugh shaking his head. I don't know if that's been transferred back to 270 yet, but it will be shortly, and that line item will be well under the budgeted amount. Extinguisher maintenance, you'll probably hear this across all the departments, but we're at 50%. All of our annual extinguishers have been maintained for the year, so the only thing that we'll have reoccurring in that line item will be if we use them on an incident. So we'll be well under by the end of the fiscal year. Building maintenance, we're at 103%, and I will tell you that this is directly attributed to the fire prevention functions, again, down at Trick. We've had to add in an office space so that they have space to do their plan reviews. Commissioner Gill, I know all the commissioners are familiar with this, but we use an electronic process, so we need space to put in the big screen TVs, a space to lay out plans when we're meeting with companies. So we've had to move them out of the office now that the firefighter's in the office and basically do a tenant improvement in the fire station. We do have significant unanticipated, higher than anticipated revenues from plan reviews that will offset that by the end of the fiscal year if it doesn't level itself out. Professional services, we're at 49%, and that's completely anticipated. That's the WFPP, which is the NDF contract for the wildland services through Division of Forestry. We pay that a quarter in advance. That's why we're exactly one quarter over. Computer equipment, we're at 67%, and that was all budgeted items. We just opted to buy those in July, August to get Station 75 equipped properly to habitate that building and open that building back up. That will level out by the end of the fiscal year. Fire protection supplies, again, we're over on that, and I can tell you that that's directly attributed to responses. Our responses are much higher. Our numbers are higher for this year on the EMS, fire, hazmat side. There will be invoices issued out to offset that expense and be GL'd back into that line item. Remember, we started that fire recovery this last year. Fire recovery, there's significant revenue in that already to transfer in. So that will level up by the end of the year. And last but certainly not least on this 250 is ambulance supplies. And again, we're at 77%. And that's kind of an interesting thing when you really digest that is if our call volume's not up, then we're not spending money on supplies. But our call volume is way up for this fiscal year, so we're using more supplies, expendable supplies. There will be higher than anticipated revenue in the EMS billing side that will more than offset the expenses of that equipment that's disposable. And that's it in 250, if there are any questions.
I think this is tremendous work. I mean, I look, again, I appreciate that we do the line items so that we focus on the individual components, but we can always, should always also look at where this fund stands to date. And on total expenditures, where we would hope to be at 25%, we're at 26. Hang on, stay tuned for that. And on total revenues, where we would want to be at least at 25%, we're at 34. I think it's very important to note, as the chief has briefly mentioned, what's missing and what is here, but what's missing more importantly on the revenue side, and those are the Tesla monies. We have yet to receive our first or second quarter monies from Tesla. We're working with them. It's a fast-paced project, as we know. We'll get those monies. But that is a significant chunk of change for the fire district in terms of both the plan review and permitting fees, as well as the staffing fees for 50% of our staff out of Station 75, plus all the ancillary things that he mentioned, such as operating supplies, utility overheads, and stuff like that. None of that has hit the books yet. So in essence, long story short, this is probably the best I've ever seen this budget as far as in shape, you know, without the infusion that it's due that we will get to you. So great job.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Any questions for Gary before he moves on to the next category?
Okay. Yeah, and the only other one I have to discuss is 270, which is the mutual aid fund. You'll see that this is significantly in the red currently. We're at 179% of expenditures at 25% of the budget, and that's entirely due to not receiving any of our fire billings back yet. We have about $300,000 to $350,000 in pending, outlying, not collected yet revenues coming into that fund.
And those are always paid. It's just a matter of time, right?
It is, yeah. It's kind of, I think that we've been hit so hard, not in Nevada, but in the western states, that our federal cooperators are just far behind on their billings. Usually we get payments within 4 to 6 weeks or so, and we have not received a single payment yet this fiscal year, which is, it's not alarming, it's just interesting. I know that they're extremely busy. Any questions on that one?
A couple things we're going to do with the chief's account. Number one, it's by the 6 month period, we'll have taken hopefully those items of revenue that we did not budget for, and this is the good part about this. It was up in the air as to whether we were even going to go with this project, so we decided not to budget with this. But now we have the ability to augment before the December 31st deadline, augment those fees that are attributed to the chief for Tesla, and also take those items that are such as the fire fees in the future. What we will do is when that billing goes out, we will bill that. We will make that an account receivable, so the chief gets credit for it in the month that it was billed.
Yeah, and just a reminder, too, we still have that SAFER grant out there that we'll be collecting on. We haven't submitted yet. We're not due until next month, which is an odd thing for our quarterly inputs and then reimbursements on that SAFER grant. Any other questions?
For Gary? Great.
Thank you.
Good job, Gary. Next, we have Sherry Nevin with Community Service.
For the Community Service budget, at 25% into the budget, we're trending at 23. You'll notice three different line items that are at 100%. The first is RSVP sponsorship, and this is a yearly allocation that we provide to them. It's in July of every year, so it's one time. That's it. So that'll level out by the end of the fiscal year. The other is Piper's Opera House. Same situation. We pay it in July of every year, so by the end of the fiscal year, it'll be down. The third one is community support payments, and it's showing at 100%, and that is only because with this particular account number, we've got several different object codes associated with that. So it's showing up weird on the budget here. So Jesse and I are going to try to work to maybe get that changed next time so it looks a little bit better. So it's actually not at 100%. It's trending just fine at 25%. So those are the only three items in our budget. If anyone has any questions.
Thank you, Sherry. Do you want to... Sherry has emergency management. I have nothing on emergency management that we need to talk about at this time.
Okay.
Next is Dave Ballard with communications.
Good morning. Start with a few items here. I'll save the big elephant on the page for last. Some of my items here, you'll see for this part of the year, I'm only at 23% of the total budget. So I'm riding where I need to be, but there's a few in here that are a little high. The communication stuff, I had to purchase some new equipment. I had to purchase some headsets and things like that just recently, so that kind of adds up in that value. Once that stuff's done, I don't anticipate spending more money there. I had to purchase a couple radios and things like that that I don't think I will need to purchase anymore. The rents and leases is at 46%, and the reason for that is I pay a yearly lump sum to the state of Nevada for rack space and antennas up on one of the mountaintops, and I just paid that recently. The rest of the stuff is a monthly that comes out, but that's just one lump sum. The telephone's at 40%, and that's actually, I think, a little high, and I think it's going to start dropping. We just cut over to our new phone system here in August, and some of these bills that were paid to AT&T, they've been kicking back rebates and refunds and things like that, of things that were overpaid on the old system. So some of those, there's been a couple checks coming in that actually may be a little lower that hasn't been credited back into there yet. But they're coming in, you know, like $100 here, $88 here, $200 here. They're starting to kick in some checks that are coming back. So I think it's a little high, and you could actually see that number drop a little bit. And the office supplies is at 26%. I don't have much to say on that. Pretty much everything with the exception of the overtime is where it needs to be. And you can see the overtime as of October 15th was at 85%. A little explanation on it is, the summer we traditionally have vacations and whatnot with people, so there's a lot more people taking time off. We went with that. I've had a couple people that have been either on some sort of restricted schedule for doctor reasons or some medical stuff that they've been out for a while. Now, the other thing with it I've noticed this year, and I'm sure everyone in the room can verify this, we seem to be a lot busier than we were last year. I can't really single staff my dispatchers like I used to be able to do in the past. We've just been really moving. And I did a little check on this. After I talked to Hugh on Thursday, I pulled the stats from last year to January 1st of 2014 to October 15th, just to kind of take a look at it to see where we were. And last year at that time, we were at 10,875 incidents that the dispatchers created. This year at the same date, we're at 12,915. So we're up about a little over 2,000 on the incidents, about 2,040 actually. So that's been keeping them a lot busier. The other thing I notice is the phones are nonstop. They're ringing constantly, and they're really busy with the phone traffic. Well, in August, we cut over to that new 911 system, and I'll actually explain that to you guys later when I get a few more things worked out with the cell providers. I'll go into detail with all that. But the new system has a call tracking software in there, so I can actually look at the numbers. And I did a quick check, and it came online the first week of August. August 1st is when it came on. And from August 1st to October 15th, the dispatch center in there has answered 19,109 calls. It's probably 20,000 now. It's just nonstop. You do the math on that, you're looking at about almost 300 calls a day. So about roughly 150 per shift is what they're answering in there. And that's usually with one person on. So it's been really busy, and I've been trying to staff more so for them to keep up with the traffic. it's at the point where their phones are ringing so much, there's so much traffic going on in there, they're having a rough time keeping up with themselves. So to keep our heads above water, I have to bring in people for overtime. You know, we're just looking at different times. It's unpredictable. I can't predict when it's going to be how it is anymore. I've been working some graveyards and double shifts, working till midnight quite a bit myself, just to try to keep up with the call volume on it. But it's just really, like I said, it's really keeping them busy. Another issue with it they have, and it's not an issue, it's a good thing, because it is generating revenue, is the contracts that the sheriff has with the federal prisoners. We're housing tribal prisoners now. There's 22 to 25 of them coming in. So that means all the people that are coming in and being booked into there, there has to be paperwork processed. The dispatchers are the only people. My office is the only place that has a terminal for the county, which means that's where we run all our criminal history, our driver's licenses. All that stuff is done through dispatch there. So they're booking a lot more people coming in, and that paperwork has to be done to know where you're going to house someone. You know, you can't house a, you know, a felon with a, you know, just a drunk or something. You have to be able to process them and know where they're going to put them. So that paperwork has to be done. There's a lot more activity on the street, which they're doing, more activity, more citations and stuff that are being written. And that stuff all has a timeline on it as well. You know, when they're on a traffic stop or whatever, they're on an investigation, they only have an hour. So we really have to kind of kick it up and get things done to try to avoid these things. So there's just a lot more activity going on. There's a lot more stuff on their plates. So I had to bring more people in. I have to staff differently now to try to manage that. And that's kind of where we are. Again, I have six dispatchers in there. And with a couple of them out either on medical or on restriction, some sort of medical restrictions, I have to kind of staff and pay a little bit more overtime to make it work. And that's kind of why my overtime is where it is at this time.
Do you expect that trend to stay steady then?
Yeah, I just see it keep going. It seems like every day they're getting busier, you know. And it's like I said, there's certain times. It used to be you could predict it from about 10 o'clock at night to about 4 o'clock in the morning. There wouldn't be as much activity, but now it seems like there's a lot more activity. I mean, it seems like, you know, you got a lot more workers out in the industrial parks. There's more activity there. And you got a lot of things coming up here you normally didn't have. It seems like there's a lot more, you know, incidents and things like that that are taking place up here as well. It just seems like it's just a trend. I guess it's...
Well, we know that since Station 75 has opened up, there's been a lot more traffic out there.
And there has been.
This is one of those things that we thought may happen, but weren't really sure that has happened. And as Gary has attested to the last couple of times, since the first hour that he's been in there, I mean, that thing has nonstop. So when you combine that going nonstop by the fact that there's all of those calls now that have to go through the dispatch center. And not only that, if you've got ambulatory or whatever instances out there, you're also going to have a sheriff's officer there for part of that time. Things have just, you know, what Gary initiates, there's at least two, maybe three departments that are sitting out there that are going to get affected by this. So, and Dave's certainly one of them, and I think we probably need to take a look at Dave's structure, see where it's at, see where we're going, and make some adjustments as we may with the Sheriff's Department.
And I think, honestly, all that considered, while we are all very sensitive to overtime, is probably the hottest button, as I think Dave's done an excellent job saying, we really don't have any choice reactively, proactively, as Hugh have said. You know, we're beginning to look at different models. Dave and I chatted yesterday. You know, and the bottom line, again, is for this department, he's at 21% of his budget at 25%. So he's, you know, you heard it. We've got yet another department head that is working his own graveyard shifts. And, oh, by the way, he doesn't get paid overtime. You know, he just has to work it and then probably come to one of my sufferable meetings at 7:30 the next morning. So,
if this trend is to continue, you're going to have to weigh whether if it's more cost effective to pay the overtime than it is to hire more staff to cover it. I mean, sometimes the overtime is cheaper in the long run.
And we're looking at that.
Right. Yeah, the one thing, though, is the biggest problem, too, is it's going to get busier with all the next generation 911 stuff that we just did. And what that did was we had all the cell towers, the cell providers, once we upgraded our phone system, they now have to upgrade their systems to where all the 911 traffic and the wireless calls are going to start rolling into us. So there's probably, I don't know if you're aware of this, there's probably six or seven towers that run right along that I-80 corridor, or maybe four or five. And I had to go through and restructure those and line those up. And with the exception of one that's in Lockwood that faces into Sparks covering Bering and Hidden Valley and all that area, that's the only one that really, you know, it works for Washoe County. The rest of them are all lined up in ours. So we're going to start getting a lot more phone traffic. All those 911 calls for the accidents and the spin-outs and everything else that occur during the winter months, all those are going to start rolling into my dispatch center probably in January and February. So that 19,000 is probably going to be, you know, or the, you know, the three, whatever it was, the 300 a day is probably going to be closer to 450 to 500 a day when that starts happening.
So is that the train that gets to the worst calls during the winter?
Well, you do get a lot. It doesn't really matter when it is, but traditionally in the winter you get more accidents because you get more ice and, you know, people, especially that first winter storm, people don't know how to drive in the snow. It takes the first storm for them to remember how to drive again. But traditionally you figure in the winter, not necessarily is there a, you know, anything particularly good. I mean, it could be any time, but you're going to get a lot more anytime there's weather. I mean, you get rain, you're going to get oils and stuff like that are going to come up on the road. But, you know, you get a little bit more ice, you get a little bit more things, and you know, you're more inclined to where if you get a single vehicle accident, like say in the summer, well, in the winter you might get a 40 car accident because everyone's sliding on ice trying to avoid that one. So that's kind of where it happens. But just like I said, that whole corridor, pretty much from Vista all the way to Wadsworth, has towers and they're all kind of quadrangled out into the thing. And right now, most of the calls go into Reno Ecom, but the towers are ours technically, and it's covering all of Story County. It's covering the industrial park. It's covering Rainbow Bend. It's covering all along there. So, you know, we opted to take those calls. I mean, I'd rather be able to answer a call if someone's calling 911 out there in Lockwood or something on their cell. I'd rather be able to take that call than have Reno try to figure out where this street is and try to determine who it is. We can get there a lot faster. We know what's our jurisdiction and we know what their jurisdiction is quite a little bit better than they do. So that's kind of why we take that. Okay, thanks. If there's no other questions, then I guess I'm done. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, David.
Next is County Manager Pat Witt.
Okay, I have two budgets to review with you today. The first will be the commissioners. We're on the bottom line basis, we're right on track at 25%. I believe Hugh established a provision in there for 10% variance over the 25% mark. We actually have none. And the commissioners were nudging a couple salary and wages, and also PERS are bumping at 28 and 27%. Part of that is legislative changes on the elected official pay bills impacted both us on a minor basis. So we're in good shape on the commissioners' budget for the first quarter. For the administrative budget, a much bigger budget. Bottom line basis is we're at 13% versus 25%. We have a number of mechanisms in there that Hugh has instilled in over the years, such as partial portioning out our annual insurance premium. Those types of maneuvers have got us in probably a more reasonable number. But I'd also tell you that number is skewed greatly by an item I'm going to discuss here in a minute, and that's miscellaneous. The ones of note would be PERS. We're at 35%. I want to get back to you on that one. I would tell you the report I received was there may be some spillback on some of the elected salary increases. I don't know that that's exactly accurate since most of that should probably be reflected in the commissioners and not the administrative side. So I'll get back to you on that one. Health insurance, while it looks high at 31%, that is actually a negative 31. And we have one individual on COBRA who, rather than pay monthly for their insurance, has opted just to say, here's my check for a whole year. So that's prepaid in advance as a credit on the books. The next one of note is legal printing. I can't blame Austin anymore for this one. Once a year, we have to codify our statutes, no matter how modern and database we get. So we've done that for this year. that should catch up over the next and subsequent quarters. The one I really want to focus on for just a minute is small in dollar, huge in percentage, and that's groundwater not assessed. This is a very complex thing to describe. Basically, to the best of my knowledge, most, if not all, of every well-served residence parcel falls within one of two water basins, either the Tracy Basin or the Dayton Basin. For years, the State Water Master's Office has provided us this pesky little bill of about $1,500 and saying, you need to put a 1 or a 2 cent assessment on each of your people with wells, each of your parcels with wells. That's going to cost us more than, in essence, just saying, we'll just expense this, absorb it on behalf of the entire county, and not individually assess additional parcels in such de minimis amounts. We finally got that hammered out last year for $1,500 for the Dayton Basin, and lo and behold, that apparently woke them up, and they said, oh, hey, guess what? You owe us on the Tracy Basin, too, for the wells that are in operation out there. So we're treating both similar, and the total of $4,000 covers any back arrearage, plus current for this year, and unless so directed by the commission otherwise, we intend, since it's such a small amount, rather than parcel that out to every individual resident in particularly the Mark Twain area, but also the tri-area, we're going to simply just take it and pay it as one lump sum out here. So that's the groundwater not assessed. And miscellaneous on the second page is all jumbled up right now. That'll fix itself. It basically, we've got pass-through monies going back and forth on Tesla with everything, and the notes I have here is we're moving that to a balance sheet account, so the expenses will not be and revenues will not be overstated or understated in the near future. We'll get that done. We're really not that high. So, and that's commissioners and administrative, both in good shape.
Very good.
The rest of the packet that usually Jesse takes care of are all pass-through accounts. That includes the state accounts, the school accounts, the school debt accounts. A lot of those are just in and out accounts, and then with your permission for the December deal, unless there's a problem with one of those pass-through accounts, you'll probably not see those unless you really want to take a look at that stuff. Because all they are really is in and out accounts. The next will be Clerk Treasurer and Vanessa.
Morning. I have two. The first one I'll do is my general Clerk Treasurer account. I'm at 23% so far. The first one that jumps out is postage, and a GL has been submitted that'll balance that out. We take in all the postage each quarter through our office and then spread the costs out afterwards, so we're just waiting for that. The next thing is my equipment maintenance, and that was an annual payment that we make at the beginning of the year, so it blows it up. And then the next is professional services, and we pay for our court view services at the beginning of the year. On my court one, we are at 8% right now. I do have one item at 94%, and that's a prepaid annual. And then same with my pre-sentence investigations, that one's been prepaid as well. That's all I have.
Unit marker?
That one's just a pass-through.
That's just a pass-through.
Yeah. So,
question, there was a comment made by the clerk treasurer for Carson City at a meeting we had with our legislatures. And she was talking to the legislatures and everybody about her voting equipment and they're kind of archaic and whatever, and whether or not there's going to be new voting machines and whatever. You got any update on that?
Well, we met with the Secretary of State's office during CFOA a couple weeks ago. They've yet to decide what equipment we'll be moving forward with, if we upgrade what we have or go somewhere totally different. And then once that's decided, they'll go to the federal level for the HABA funding. So right now, we don't really know. Our equipment here is holding up great and working well, so I'm not concerned.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. County Recorder Jim Chapman.
As with, I think, many other people, overall, we're doing pretty good. If we're tracking about 23% at 25% of the time in. Individually, there's a couple accounts that jump out. We've got travel, dues and subscriptions, and equipment maintenance, and record management, and pretty much all of those are balance out in the end. Their annual fees, dues are for the year. Equipment maintenance, these are contracts that are paid yearly. Record management, same sort of thing. And then travel, now that meeting season is over, I think that's going to balance out too. Any questions?
Great. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. County Assessor, Janice Eden.
I have one item that is riding at 50%, and that's my travel expenses. And basically, we're right on track because most of our travel happens in August and September, and then April and May for conferences and classes. So sitting at 50%, we're 50% through our budget cycle pretty much for travel. So, and that's pretty much it. Unless you guys have any questions.
How's your tech fund doing?
Tech fund is awesome. We're sitting at zero. We haven't spent anything on those yet, so yay me.
Great job. Thank you.
You know, before Janet leaves, and I didn't get a chance since she took a pass on staff reports in general, but, you know, I can think of at least two major conferences, conventions that we've had this year. The chief with the NSFA conference was great. And, we've hosted the Assessors Conference for the state of Nevada in the past. I've never seen as good a conference as this one was. You know, we had tours. I attended the closing banquet dinner the last night while there was training the next day, I might add. And it was a great event, I think, for showcasing the county. And I know Jana and her team did a superb job. It was a great job. So
thank you. This county, and I said it in the department head meeting, but this county makes it easy for to put these conferences on. Like I said earlier, is that the comments that I continue to get from other counties and other vendors, we're talking nationwide vendors, they can't believe how well we work together as individuals, because I didn't put this conference on, this county put this conference on. I had help from the fire department. I had help from the tourism, with loaning people, with everybody working together to get vehicles. Lance, in his offices, they put tours together, and we had two tours. One was the Marlette Water Lake tour. It was amazing that people didn't really realize what we have to go through to get water in Nevada, and it was a huge eye-opener, very successful tour. The Industrial Park tour, once again, I'm getting calls from the bigger counties now asking me questions because they couldn't believe. When you drive down I-80, you see a few things. You hear all the talk, but until you actually see it, you don't really realize what's going on, because they're just now hearing all the big businesses. They don't realize all the small businesses that we have in that industrial park that's really making that industrial park boom. That's where the money is right now, the smaller businesses, because as we all know, with all the economic development and all the tax abatements that these bigger counties, it's these smaller businesses that keep us bumping and jiving and going out there. It was a huge eye-opener from people not only all over the state of Nevada, but we had people, like I said, that are vendors that came out and took these tours. They cannot believe what this small county is doing and how well we all work together to make this happen. Comptroller's office, helping to come out and bartend and just talk to people about what's going on. You know, you can't come out here without having a pecan made specially for you. And I'm sure there's other offices that I'm forgetting. I'm not sure if I mentioned, I think, fire department loaning us vans, commissioner's office setting up all the travel and making sure that we had people to drive so that there was no county vehicles being operated while partaking of some beverages. It was just awesome. And actually, the county made me look good, so I appreciate everything that this county's done. So, and go Lady Mucks. As it's game day, I don't think people realize just how many girls that we have from our county, our county staff, how many girls are actually females that are playing on our volleyball team. That's doing wonderful. We have Lindy Renault out of the Planning Commission. We have Gary Hames, Mike Nevin, Dory Nevin, because, you know, then Sherry Nevin, and, gosh, I'm missing so many other people. We have also Jen Chapman's daughter, my daughter, of course, and so today's game day. So go Lady Mucks. We're doing well. Looks like we may have a shot at going to state, so everybody root for those Lady Mucks.
Next is from the Sheriff's Department is Melanie Keener.
Okay, I'm going to do the best I can at this. There are 10 items that with the Sheriff's Office that appear to be over the 25%. Overall, from the way that I see it, it looks like we're at 21%, which looks good. The first one is, like Dave said, the elephant in the room is overtime. And that one we're showing at 63%. Basically, with public service, you know, we're driven based on that need. And we've seen an increase. We've seen an increase in tourism events. We've also seen an increase out in tribe. So some of the explanations I have, excuse me, is the additional calls within the detention facility requiring medical transports, requests for bailiff duties from justice court and district court, special events and additional events, including hot August nights. Training was conducted in July and August this year compared to December and January to prior year budgets. And within the previous few months, there have been at least two substantial criminal cases investigated, resulting in numerous deputies on overtime to conduct the investigations. And so those things are perhaps the largest reasons. On this also, I calculated up the number of hours just for special events within Virginia City. And from July 1 until October 1st, looks like we had 363 hours that we had on overtime. That totaled out to be approximately $16,149.87. And so that would be, if you deduct that amount from the total amount, we'd be sitting at about 35% on that for overtime. So the other one is postage, and that one is just a demand-driven item. We have rents and leases, which is the Lockwood annual rent came out of that, so that's why it's showing higher. But there won't be, you know, that afterwards. Training is at 61%. We did the Lexapol one-time annual payment. And also, as with the overtime percentage, training was conducted early on so that we can get the mandatory post-requirement trainings out of the way. And we did those now instead of having to rush at the end of the year to do those. Uniforms are at 39%, and those were for the purchase of new uniforms for reserve recruits. That was actually from last year. We just didn't get the billing until this cycle. Fingerprint and background is at 40%. That's also a demand-driven item. The reserve fund is at 50%, and that's a sponsorship fee for the Post Academy for one of the reserves, and that's a $500 flat rate fee. Inmate medical is at 39%. This is due to an increase in pre-existing medical complaints for certain long-term and frequent inmates. So we... with the increase in the criminal investigations that we've had, we have more of those long-term inmates. They're going to be there for a while because their charges are higher. And with that, we get a lot of the medical complaints from them, a lot of them being pre-existing. So we have to deal with those and absorb some of those costs. Also, this is due to increase in medical, emergency medical issues with the Bureau of Indian Affairs inmates. Inmate food is at 48%. This is also due to the increase in the BIA inmates. Our staffing used to be roughly our inmate population was 4 to 5 previously. Now we're running at about 25 inmates. And then also inmate supplies are at 65%. This is also an increase due to the BIA inmates. With that, though, the good news is that of those three last items, BIA has already been billed, and we've already collected from them $30,000 to date, which is well above what the cost itself was. And that's all that I have. Any questions?
Question for you is, do we take those reimbursements and do a GL on these?
The reimbursements from the BIA? BIA will go into the general fund.
Okay.
By statute, it has to go in the general fund.
Right.
And then we can augment.
But then we can always augment.
Okay.
So, Melanie and I sat down the other day, and a lot of these items, you know, we obviously didn't anticipate during the budget cycle because the BIA contract was not completed yet. So as those revenues are generated, there will be augmentations back into there for those items that are over. On the overtime thing, it's again a situation where what has happened in the industrial park for the most part has it's, you know, Chief Hames has been busy from minute one, as has Dave Ballard and has the Sheriff's Department. So I think between now and December, we may look at some adjustments along the line. Tesla has will obviously part of their reimbursement is for that, so we can also augment that. But looking long term to see what's going on down there, at least for the next budget cycle, we may need to make some changes.
Then I think the same is also true in the jail end of this thing. We've gone from housing probably an average of 2 to 3 per day. I don't know what our average bed occupancy is now, but it's much higher. Our revenue from BIA is much higher. That's also going to have to change some of our correction officer staffing models as well, because when you change your occupancy loads like that, you have to adjust. But again, the money's there. We just have to move it through and take care of it. So it's being watched and being watched closely, I think, at all levels. Mel's doing a great job.
Is there any other questions?
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Next is the community development, Dean Hamer.
Don't tell us how busy you are.
Good morning, commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity. There's a few items. My total budget is running at 22%. I have three items. One item is at 35%, and that's record management. It's a whole budget of $250. We've had more requests for industrial plans that we get charged every time they bring them on site and off site, and we get those plans. So that's one of my items. The other item is 43% is travel. Most of that is all because I attended the NACO conference this year, and that was at 43%. That will even out. Of course, the same with all the departments. My overtime is at 49%. It will stay with some overtime because of the workloads we're doing, and it will probably be over budget at what we budgeted this year. And I'm sorry, but we are going to be a little bit over, but hopefully that'll budget out with all of it. And I just can't do the 50, 60, 70 hours anymore to offset and send my employees home, so I will be running in with overtime. Good news is, as of September 15th, we have taken in $410,000 in permit fees. We're over 1,000% revenue generating. What Gary probably didn't say and Pat was alluding to, we are in these nine-digit numbers of valuations of permits out to Tesla that our staffs have done and plan checking and things like that. So currently my budget total is at 22%. Any questions?
It should also be pointed out that even though your overtime is at 49%, the dollar value is not excessive.
No. Exactly, and I would add in here, this is one of those, if you had more staff to control your overtime, I would say given those dollar amounts, we aren't there, although we are constantly assessing loads, seeing if there are some part-time solutions at the inspector levels. the nature of these operations, again, you know, some of them need inspections at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're going to have some overtime when Dean's not available, so they're doing a great job. They are busy, you know, bar none. I get that sense from all. And it is one of those, we just try to make sure it is justified over time, in which case I would tell you that as of the report you guys are looking at, not Dean's, with $4,500 in overtime year to date, those are minimal amounts. I know I can pick up the phone and any time I need quality numbers presented to me in a quick, methodical way, whether I'm testifying before the legislature or whatever, the person that I usually turn to is Stacy, who then has to put three other projects on hold and probably realistically get back to those sometime around 5:10, 5:15 at night. So I'm comfortable with where we are, to be truthful. We will continue to keep a watch on it, make sure it's justified.
Thank you. Just to let you know, Tesla, we gave a temporary CFO on October 1st as of over the weekend. They have completely moved into 280,000 square foot of Section A building and operating. They have got all their equipment up there and bringing all their merchandise in to, they have actually four or five lines that will be in full operation. They were training yesterday. They have moved all their office personnel in the building, 150 office personnel in the building and going strong. One of the other things that our office is handling quite a bit is business licensing. You see the majority of the agenda is business licensing. Trying to stay up with all the different businesses working out there with Tesla. And then we're going to be ramping up with Panasonic. You'll also see Panasonic's business license on today's, but all the different companies coming in and all the different companies working for Panasonic and all the different contractors that will be working on the Panasonic. Equipment will be shipped and starting arriving in the 1st of December. The building will, as of last night, pretty well closed in now. They closed in the last elevator section. Last night. So besides that, Switch is going full construction now. Aqua Meadows is full construction. Our good friends at Saddleback Court that we've been working with 10 years. Fulcrum is in full construction. With that plant, we are meeting Jet.com has now got their full employees and working full operation out of their facility. And we met with other companies yesterday. That will probably be proceeding with new plans. Some of the little buildings of 700,000 or bigger that we're talking to that we will probably get or they'll start operations during this next winter season. Any other questions?
Okay, great. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Our next one is our district attorney, there is nothing out of line with her budget for the most part, so consequently we'll save some time for Ms. Langer to come up here. Next is the Justice Court, Eileen Harrington.
Good morning.
Okay. Looking at this, there's a clerical error on our inputting. If you take a look at our dues and subscriptions, it's got us at 161%. I was looking at that, and there should have been an item that should have gone into training, 53029 instead of 53014, and that's just something that we have to correct. So actually, training, we should be, excuse me, dues and subscription, we've only spent $50 versus the $645 that's stated there. That's a huge difference. On the travel, where we're over, all of the travel will be reimbursed 100% by the state. That was a recent conference that I went to. I've already received the approval to reimburse, and we're just waiting for the actual check from the Supreme Court. And in fact, I prepared the packet, and Hugh, you submitted that packet recently. So that brings the travel would actually be at 0%. It brings the dues and subscriptions from down to just $50, which is a very small percentage. And then training, anything that we still have out on that, even though it's way under, will be reimbursed also. Because any of the trainings I go to, a recent training in July I received a scholarship for, and then the rest was reimbursed by the state, and that's pretty much for any of the training that I attend. It's always pre-approved by the state and then reimbursed at 100%. On professional services, we're at 42%. That's there were two cases that because of two cases that I had to recuse myself from because one was a personal tie to one of the parties involved, and the other was a business tie. So I had to recuse myself from those cases, but those cases are done. They were minimal, you know, just short cases. Anything else that you have questions on? Anybody? Okay, and I'll get that.
On your Justice Court, there was the court fund.
Mm-hmm.
Justice Court fines are at a 45% level. Mm-hmm. That's all the increase in activity. Is that basically the industrial park?
You know, it's been not just because of Tesla. But in the past few years, most of our traffic comes from the industrial park. Okay. So, anything else?
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. And I did want to add, we do have some cases rolling through the court system that will have an impact on court reporting and basically court reporting. Yeah, it'll have an impact on that. And just I wanted to bring your attention to the interpreter fees. We've kept them kept them way in control because we're using an online service or a service. You see the little phone back there? We can use that with many of our cases. We cut the cost in the last couple of years by about 60% on our interpreter fees. And then also the computer software, the reason we're at 100% on that is because that's a court view fee that we have to pay to the state, and it's a once-a-year fee that we pay every year. Okay.
Thank you. Our next budget is James Dean's budget with the Information Technology Department. I'm going to handle that. He has been has an excused absence. The big item is 193. He was over budget on the travel at about 193, and we're going to probably augment some of this. He went to San Francisco for a VMware conference. It was a core conference. There was a certificate involved with that, which he got. The VMware operates probably about 90% of our what we do, where we go, anywhere on the technology side. From a lot of the stuff that he has done, and a lot of stuff that he learned from there. He was able to build a server that would have cost us about $30,000 for about $10,000. So just from that alone, where we had budgeted some of that in that capital for capital equipment, that will no longer be there. The other thing was the transformer that sits out in front of that building there. We were going to have to, I think, make that a 200 watt, which would have cost us probably, I don't know, $20,000 for a new transformer through NV Energy. James and his staff decided they would go with LED lighting, thereby saving a lot of power in that whole little building. So James has had a really good quarter and is still tracking at about 22%. The next is my department. There was a 922% overage on postage, which was actually not correct. Again, that's why we do these budgets, is sometimes there's misclassifications in the accounts, and we've got probably over 2,000 account items that we have. And when you put that against 35 funds and about 75 object codes, it's a lot. However, we have some professional services for about $850,000 or $850 that should have been in professional services, and so that pretty much takes care of that item. And we're tracking at about 20%. The other items that we were looking at, equipment acquisition, obviously we're making payments on fire truck payments, and we have to have a transfer to the industrial park for all of those receipts that we receive appropriate to the audit. That will probably be approved at the November 1st budget meeting for the industrial park. Capital projects, we've got... that first quarter, there has probably been about the Highlands payment for the 474 fire district payment, a little bit on the courthouse parking lot, a little bit on the Pocket Park or the Pocket Park, Pocket Parks. The VC storm drains project was about $4,400. VC waterline project, and then there was some work out in the industrial park for the Denmark pipe grading, Peru pipe grading, Venice inlet pipe graded, Venice, and the pump station four channel widening in amount of about $16,000. But we're still sitting at a fund balance of a little over $3 million, we will be very diligent in spending those funds going forward. Infrastructure, obviously, is funded by the one-quarter sales tax. It has had expenditures for the Cape Seal project for about $382,000. That was probably in the industrial park. That now has a balance of a little over $1.3 million. The USA Bond Special Revenue Fund is that's the fund that we pay all of our USDA debts out of, whether it comes from our wastewater treatment plant or the new fire engines and ambulances that we have bought. So those payments come out of there. Park tax fund, as of June 30th, you can write this down if you need to be. The balances as of June 30th of 2015 is that Miners Park has a $5,994.79 balance. Rainbow Bend has a $36,262 and 4 cent balance. Mark Twain has a $32,567.35 balance. And the Highlands Park Fund has a $42,783.49 balance.
$42,000?
Yeah. The obviously the next is our tri-payback. We again is based on a stipulation agreement that we have with our public-private partner. We have made a disbursement of about $574,000 out in July. We expect that audit the audit findings to have been completed for the year into 2014. They will be approved at our next board meeting, and then the audit for the year ending 2015 will then commence with Kuhn-Kleige. The VC Rail project is still on hold. We're still not giving them any money. Commissioner McGuffey and I have been in conversations with the various individuals, and I have sent them numerous emails and telephone calls asking when the audit of as particular to the interlocal agreement will commence. I have not heard anything yet, so we will wait a little while longer before I'm sure Commissioner McGuffey will get involved. And then that is probably all of the things that I am tasked with, Mr. Chairman. If there's no further questions, we'll bring the Planning Department up.
Thank you, Chairman. Commissioners, pretty simple here. For office supplies, we're over a little bit. I had budgeted for a protracting desktop for Jason. It's a item allows him to stand and sit at work, and it's good for him, and it's good for his health, and it makes him happy. That was budgeted. I ordered it early, and then it pushed this quarter over, and you will find this become corrected throughout the rest of the year. I will mention for the rest of the year, the next time I come up here at this podium, I will have some explaining to do on printing costs, as well as professional services as we near the end of the master plan and thousands of pages will be printed. And, of course, our Title 17 book here that we will be hearing today will have some substantial mileage on the machine.
Any questions for Austin?
Thank you.
Austin.
Our next is, fresh out of the hunting blind, Denny Dotson. The best for last.
If it started with you, we'd be done with it.
Exactly. Well, I'll add a little flavor to this. If you spend any time in northern rural Nevada, you know that there's probably several things, but a couple of things that come to light that are important to everyone is land, the way of life, and then a good, fine spirit at the end of the day. The Virginia City Tourism Commission's budget is kind of geared around those three things, and really some of our variance to date is the reason why. Namely, the Black and Howell building, the new rodeo grounds, fairgrounds area, and then for those that are sure have been in our meetings lately, the launch of Cemetery Gin will be next week. So as you look through our revenue and some of our expenditures, that is majority of the reasons are some of these capital expense items that we've incurred. To look at revenue real quick, and again, the VCTC is one of those, I guess one of those departments or one of those funds that if it's managed well, which I believe we do a pretty good job as a team, it can create revenue for the county. That's what we're trying to do. And when I hear Deputy Kerner upset or a little concerned about a little overtime with the special events, that makes me know that our team is doing their job. But a couple of things to stand out to look at, just to put on the record there, is that the BCTC is also funded by gaming licenses, and that's definitely a watch out for us with the turn of events over the last few weeks, that we're going to have to take that and account for that, either in additional revenue or cut back some expenses. Our tourism and room tax is right on budget where we should be. Special events really is a, and a lot of the other expenses that we see here are a result of tourism being largely the summertime months. So we incur a lot of costs. It catches itself up, or in some cases a grant. We'll spend that, and then we'll get reimbursed later in the year. So I don't see anything at all really alarming in our revenue other than the fact that we've lost gaming licenses temporarily. Expenditures, again, nothing that's really out of line. We purchased a lot of things start of the year, then kind of ride the wave till the end. I did see one error under building maintenance. That should have been the capital expense for the fairgrounds, which was categorized as maintenance. That was incorrect. And some of the visitor center expenses, again, that's all surrounded by cemetery gin. We've purchased the product. That product's being bottled as we speak. And then we'll start seeing revenue probably in a couple of months as it goes through Southern Wine and Spirits distribution process. Our advertising and whatnot, again, we do a lot of stuff up front. That, for instance, a ski program over Lake Tahoe, we've already paid for that program on both social media and some print advertising. We'll see the results to catch up to itself in the next few months. And then our reimbursements are high for our attractions is because we've seen a good summer. So we are collecting additional revenue for that, but our payouts are also up, which is a direct result. So with that, we are down a little bit, but looking at what we have ahead of us, we do need to be mindful. We need to pay attention to the smaller details and be careful to see what happens with the gaming revenue. Any questions?
Questions for Denny?
No, I don't have any questions.
Anything like
that? Thanks, Denny. Thanks. Appreciate it. Mr. Chairman, that concludes our first quarter review. I'd like to thank all the department heads and their staffs for work well done. Now we'll work on all of those items that you have found that need to be journalized somewhere else. I need some documentation to that fact, and we'll make those journal entries. And then going forward, well, there's some items sitting out there that I'll meet with some of you individually to see whether we can make some corrections, make some adjustments, see if we can't get a better plan on some of the areas that we're looking at for the second quarter. So, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have.
Okay, great. I think that all the department heads, including the elected officials, should be commended on having such clean budgets. That's great. It's great to look at it and see how tight everybody can run the budget. So that concludes item 8 of committee and the staff quarterly financial update. So let's go ahead and take about a 10-minute recess.